I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and, we hope, gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I'm saying listeners because all Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our Penn Sound archive, writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. Today I'm joined here in Philadelphia in the Arts Cafe of the Kelly Writers House by Jessica Lowenthal, a teacher and poet, author of As If in Turning, and director of the Kelly Writers House, and by Lynn Din, the Saigon-born poet whose most recent book of poems is Jam Alerts. And by Rachel Blau Duplessis, poet, teacher, critic, editor, whose newest book of poems is Torques, Drafts 58 to 76, published by Salt Modern Poets, and out since September. Drafts is that ongoing long poem in Canto Light sections. Rachel calls it her endless poem. And Torques is the third collection of these to appear. Congratulations, Rachel, on the new book. And welcome. And hello again, my pals, Lynn and Jessica.
Hello.
We're glad you're here, Rachel. Our poem today is George Oppen's Ballad, first published in Poetry Magazine in 1967, collected in Oppen's great book Of Being Numerous in 1968. Penn Sound's recording of Oppen reading this poem was made in Brooklyn in April 1979. So here now is George Oppen reading Ballad.
Ballad. Astrolabes and lexicons, once in the great houses, a poor lobsterman met by chance on Swan's Island, where he was born. We saw the old farmhouse propped and leaning on its hilltop on that island where the ferry runs. A poor lobsterman, his teeth were bad. He drove us over that island in an old car, a well-spoken man, hardly real as he knew in those rough fields. Lobster pots in their gear, smelling of salt. The rocks outlived the classicists, the rocks in the lobstermen's huts, and the sights of the island, the ledges in the rough sea seen from the road, and the harbor, and the post office. Difficult to know what one means, to be serious and to know what one means. An island has a public quality, his wife in the front seat, in a front dress, in a soft dress, such as poor women wear. She took it that we came. I don't know how to say, she said. Not for anything we did, she said, mildly. From God, she said, what I like more than anything is to visit other islands.
Well, I love listening to Oppen read, and I'm not quite sure why. It makes me happy. It makes me sleepy. What do you all think about what it's like to listen to Oppen?
It's a very non-performative feel. It's very pensive and coming as if he's just sort of in a dream almost, speaking.
There's a lilt, though, that to me has some performative quality. I maybe performative isn't the right performance quality to it across those gaps.
Well, yeah, it's just there's a majestic kind of stately regalness to his voice, which is...
It's vulnerable, but at the same time, don't mess with me. I know where I'm going. Is that
what
possible?
Do you mean?
He does, he enjams intensely. He just rolls on. And in a poem that digresses grammatically and otherwise, you're never sure what the referent is. And the reading style seems to me to emphasize that. Am I wrong about that?
No, suddenly an island just arrived out of, to be serious and know what one means, an island.
Absolutely. That is the most amazing, because that thing in the center really is such a poetics, and it's so, it could be read even as anguish, difficult to know what one means, to be serious and know what one means, an island. And there's space between the means and the island, but it's as if the island is that thing that you're speaking out of.
The ledges in the rough sea seen from the road, and the harbor, and the post office. Difficult to know what one means, to be serious and to know what one means, an island.
I mean, I have the sense of space being very important here. Somehow space is elided, it's disappeared, it's gone. We can't read it in his voice.
it's less eccentric than in Williams, because he's reading the way I imagine he would read it. He's reading the line breaks the way it's written.
Yeah, in Poem Talk number one, we were disappointed at Williams reading easily. He was reading a difficult poem in an easy way by emphasizing the stops. And here Oppen seems to be reading the poem as it's on the page. Is that a fair enough statement?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but not 100%. I think Jessica said, you know, to know what one means, an island, there's a space between those words, and it's an odd statement to juxtapose the public quality suddenly as if to be remembering that you're speaking out into a space, and yet most of the speaking in this poem is not that much into a public space. It's a curious paradox.
And that almost seems to be one of the themes of the poem. What is public? Where are we? Well, let's get to that larger question. If the reductive version of this question, I don't mind asking reductive questions if we'll elicit a response, is the reductive that's right, the teacher at work. The reductive
answers.
Right. The reductive question is, where are we? What are they doing? What do we know from the poem about what's happening? My guess is that the poet and his wife, we, are being taken somewhere. And we sort of know the place, but they really know the place. And we hang out with some locals. Is that it? Rachel, you're smiling.
It's a little teeny bit. It doesn't quite stim. You know, it doesn't go exactly together. My narrative is a little bit different, which is that somehow they've gotten to the island. I'm not sure whether they've gotten on the ferry. I know that they did a lot of sailing on this tiny little boat in Penobscot Bay, and they were very capable of kind of paddling ashore, literally, off of the sailboat in a little rubber dinghy, actually. And then I think that the fact that the ferry is there says that the island is public and that other people can approach this island. Then I think they just started talking to these people.
Lynn, what's the sense of the people, lobsterman and his wife? What's your sense of Oppen's take on them? They're lower class, they're local, rural folks, yeah?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't so concerned about the particulars, like where is this and what is his relationship to the people that he's describing, because there's always this sort of fumbling, sort of trying to navigate, trying to place himself, you know, in a lot of his poems there's always that, you know. He doesn't quite trust the validity of whatever it is he's encountering, so which is something you know, embedded in the language that he uses. There's almost no embellishment in his poetry. You know, everything is just he doesn't trust the devices that a lot of other poets employ.
I'm sorry, Lynn. Let me try to understand just the grammar and logic of this fabulous section that begins, "The rocks outlived the classicists." And then we get a list, and I'm presuming, tell me if I'm wrong, that the list are also things that the rock outlives. Or is it that these are other things that also outlive the classicists, one way or the other, right? And also this outlives the classicists, the sites, the ledges, the harbor, even the post office. Which way do we read it?
Oh, boy.
Well, I was flipping through Oppen's letters, which I brought because they mean a lot to me. And there is a motif of the north, and the north, the solidity of the granite, Maine as a very important site, and how the landscape, Maine is north, the fact of northernness and eastern extension into the sea. I cannot tell you what it means to us, meaning himself and Mary. The other antiquity, the northern antiquity, the alternative to the classic. So that it is actually an ethos, kind of an anti-Greek but not anti-humanist ethos, I guess you could say.
Curious. How about anti-academic?
I'm sure. Almost entirely.
So he's saying, is it as simple as, man, the geology, you want classics, man, here it is,
right.
Where I am
right.
At the edge of the continent on the rock. But it's not just the rock I'm asking you. He's also saying that's true, too, of the harbor and even of the post office, which, of course, is man-made.
And then these people too.
Right. Isn't it a little condescending, Lynn, that these people are associated with the rock? They're always there. You know these types.
I don't see it as condescending at all. I think he's identifying with them. I don't see any condescension at all.
He's sharing the sights with them. This requires a seer. It requires people seeing the island, the sights of the island, the ledges in the rough sea, seen from the road. They're all in the car together.
I keep on going back to the fact that guest and host have the same etymology, that a visitor is a visitation, and that they become visitations in a certain sense, especially for the wife in her soft dress, which is not condescending to me at any rate. That her desire to go other places.
What do you mean? It's not condescending in that it's sexual.
Just a soft wash dress, like the kind
that's been washed and washed and washed.
I just see it as a depression image. She's an old woman with an old dress, and they have no money, and this is
No money, but I don't think she's necessarily an old woman. She's just a mild woman who's accepted this visitation. There seems to be a kind of communication where when you travel through the world, you see things, you see people, sights, in a kind of heightened way. And what's interesting to me is that this has happened to the Oppen figure speaking this poem, let's say, but it's also to some degree happened reciprocally with the woman who sees them as kind of the wonders of the sights of the world and other islands as also potentially part of the wonder of the world.
His wife in the front seat, in a front dress, in a soft dress, such as poor women wear. She took it that we came. I don't know how to say, she said. Not for anything we did, she said, mildly. From God, she said, what I like more than anything is to visit other islands.
Jessica, in a way, accidentally created a thought experiment with this poem. Do you want to explain what happened?
Sure. I printed this on my way to a trip. I was on a plane. And
a trip to where?
I was
Maine,
going to Las
an
Vegas.
Island, no,
Las
Vegas.
Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas. Perfect.
I had basically yes, 6 hours on my way to Vegas with this poem. And the last line was cut off, and I wasn't familiar with the poem. So I did not know what she liked more than anything. And
until you returned to Philadelphia.
But did you try to write a line?
But my point is that the experiment is the last line coming as an irony or deflation? What we really like to do most of all is nothing much local, which is not quite the reading you just gave, but were you disappointed when you got home and found out after Las Vegas that the thing you like to do?
Yes, I was absolutely disappointed.
Why?
I guess partly because coming from God to visiting other islands, it felt like a major come down. There's a difficulty in speaking that can only be arrived at maybe through that last line, which is a very simple way of saying something about reaching out towards others that is more complicated because she's said these other things before.
I mean, the last part where she's sort of fumbling around too is, I mean, it echoes the whole strategy of the poem, you know, of him trying to place himself, and we are going along with that, you know. And it's the thing about Oppen that interests me is that how grounded he is, and also how adrift he is, you know. So there's always this sort of
The poem reminds me of William Carlos Williams to Elsie in some ways. There's a poem where you have the poet having who thinks of himself as a person of the people, who has a relationship to a woman who is, you know, spit out of Appalachia mixture, melange. And he's very unnerved by the connection. He's a little lost, a little attracted. Well, okay.
Pure products of America
go crazy. So
here's
Oppen, you know, out on the edge of the continent with these folks, and he has mixed feelings about it. Is it possible that the inarticulateness is not just the woman quoted, although there are not quotation marks around it, saying, I don't know how to say, she said. Not for anything we did, she said, etc. As I listen to the poem, I sense that the woman quoted is saying something profound but is not articulate about it, or is articulate in her inarticulateness, and it's beautiful. I also feel, and maybe this is encouraged by the sound of Oppen's voice in 1979, I feel his vulnerability as well, his groping, his knowing no more or less about where he is and why we're here than she. What do you think about that?
Well, there are two parallel encounters. One is with the man, the lobsterman, and all of the decency and the techne that, and the gear and the skill, the salt traps, the gear smelling of salt, the lobster pots, that that means something very, very specific Chuapin as a kind of standard. That this naming that goes on that's so interesting, the sites of the island and the harbor and the post office, all this naming grounds you so that you have a standard.
Astrolabes and lexicons, once in the great houses, a poor lobsterman met by chance on Swan's Island, where he was born. We saw the old farmhouse propped and leaning on its hilltop on that island where the ferry runs. A poor lobsterman, his teeth were bad.
At the beginning, we get the great homes. We get two archaic instruments, the astrolabes or astrolabes and lexicons, the sort of obsolete instrument for geopositioning, you know, that we used before the sextant, and lexicons, which is a slightly archaic way of talking about a dictionary. We've got those locators, and they're old. Once in the great houses, then a dash, and then we begin our story, and very soon in the story, we get an old farmhouse. So we go from the great houses associated with this archaic geopositioning tools to the old farmhouse. What can we do with that? Is that more anti-classicism, anti-academicism? Is it what's going on?
Well, the otherworldliness of these the two nouns that you know that begins the poems is in a sense he's saying they're unreliable as tools, you know.
Right. So, and in terms of the kind of poetics for this scene, they're inappropriate words.
Right.
Maybe. This is a well-spoken man. We're assuming he shares some inarticulateness, but he doesn't. He's a well-spoken man.
Right.
This is a man who may have a lexicon.
Or he may be a lexicon.
yes, the right? technique.
It's as if you could actually read this allegorically, which is so rare and often, and I'm stunned that I'm about to do this, that either that the astrolabe is like him, let's say, and the lexicon is like her. She said, or reverse. But either way, the figures are a kind of compass. They give a compass in some way to the question, how to be serious and know what one means.
He drove us over that island in an old car, a well-spoken man, hardly real as he knew in those rough fields. Lobster pots in their gear, smelling of salt. The rocks outlived the classicists, the rocks in the lobstermen's huts, and the sights of the island, the ledges in the rough sea seen from the road, and the harbor, and the post office.
Why is it a ballad? Is it a story?
Ballad is a folk form, and, you know, he is, it doesn't sound like a ballad, but
it doesn't.
So the ballad is just maybe to emphasize his engagement with common folks, you know.
So in a way, embedded in this ballad is, it's a poem about the people singing, about the people talking and how they talk, how they really talk. Is it, here I go again being negative, is it possible that he is fantasizing somewhat his relationship to this real folky scene? Is there any fantasy in this at all, Lynn?
Well, look, I mean, the syntax, and I think he has a kind of, he doesn't quite trust his own language. Is that fair to say? I mean, that's the feeling I get. That's why the hardly real pervades all his poems, I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
It's why certainly I love the reading, the 1979 reading, because it feels so vulnerable. He feels such longing in his voice for connection.
Right.
For being real.
Yeah, so everything dissolves instantly. It's not just his memories, you know, his experiences, which were very real, but they become
difficult to
they
know
fade
what
away.
One means. Yeah. I mean, I think of Wallace Stevens at the very end of his life writing poems that are essentially saying, one doesn't even know what one means anymore.
Right.
Isn't the actual, though, supposed to happen in this poem a poem? The actual, this is the word that would be used, the actual and actualness.
But there's also the question of respect, of really trying to respect the realness, the actualness of the people and their opinions, so to speak, and on this matter.
Respect them so much, Rachel, so that at the end of at the end of a poem about one of them, you would actually get her to say something as anticlimactic as, what I really like more than anything else is to visit the other islands.
I actually don't see that as anticlimactic for one second. I see it as a kind of like awe.
It's only a letdown if you're on your way to Vegas.
Jessica, do you felt like it was a little trite?
Yeah, I think maybe just islands. At that point, I was thinking, you know, no man is an island. It just felt metaphoric in a way that I was okay. unhappy with. But I think
what I like more than anything else is to visit the other casinos.
I think that no man is an island in this poem.
Before we get to the Gathering Paradise segment of our show, let me ask each of you to offer a final word on the poem, or maybe something more on what you get from it. Jessica, do you want to start?
I'm surprised that we didn't use the word knowledge a lot in relation to this poem. I feel like it's the word know, knowing, new. This is repeated a lot in this poem, and I feel like it is a poem about how one comes into knowledge as much as how one knows how to place oneself.
Thank you. Rachel?
I don't want to chicken out and read some Oppen letters again. I think I'll just say that Pound said in 1913, the natural object is the only adequate symbol.
Very nice and definitive. Lynn?
Well, I want to ask Rachel a question, because this is a rare opportunity to ask Rachel a question about this. You know, he used rocks, the image of rock recur right. all the time in his poetry, so... Can you explain, like, what
well,
does that mean?
Well, I think that there really is a desire for solidity, for an understanding of the materials, which is actually the name of one of his books, that there is a sense of grounding. And one of the last book is called Primitive, which doesn't mean primitive, you know, like the sort of cliché, but more like basic things, primal things. I think while he doesn't want to be reductive, certainly he wants to ground himself in the basics. And that's why the poem seems so spare, so cut, you know, no frills, as you were saying, no elaboration, no pretty imagery. It's the basics.
We like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands and gather a little something really poetically good, to extol, hail, puff up, commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. Lyndon, gather some paradise for us.
You know, Oppen's political engagement has often been remarked on because of his need to make sense out of the urgent issues of his time. So I would like to recommend Joe Badgen and his blog, his very engaging blog about what we are going through. And his book is called Deer Hunting with Jesus. And if you Google that, you find his blog with a lot of free essays on them.
Thank you, Lynn. Rachel, gather some paradise.
Well, you know, it's a different mode than Oppen. But I just ran into the fact that there's something called Alphabet Game from Coach House, which is a selection of B.P. Nichols' work, edited by Laurie Emerson and Darren Wurschler Henry. And I adore Nichol, which is a different taste from Oppen, long, projective, Canadian, brilliant poet who should be read. And this is a great opportunity. Alphabet Game.
Thank you. Well, that's all the geopositioning we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation of Chicago, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Lynn Dinh, Jessica Lowenthal, and Rachel Blau-Duplessis, and to my co-producer, Mark Lindsay, and Poem Talk's director and editor, Steve McLaughlin, with special help from Curtis Fox. And a grateful shout-out to Verna Gills and Michael Heller, who recorded and edited George Oppen back in 1979. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again soon for another Poem Talk.